Welcome to the workings of the townships on CJMQ 88.9 FM. This is your host, Shelby, and this is a second episode about oil and gas. Last show, I discussed the different definitions that can be used for oil and gas and how these hydrocarbons are weaved into the framework of our everyday lives. To recap from last show, fossil fuels make up around 83% of the energy that the world consumes. Most of the energy consumption accounts for heat, transportation, and electricity. When focused on electricity, fossil fuels generate more than half of the electricity used on this planet. And in order for Canada and for many other countries to fulfill their pledge to achieve net zero emissions by 2050, the use of fossil fuels, which are heavy CO2 emitters, will have to be dramatically cut. But this isn't very easy to do. Roger A. Pelkey Jr., a professor at the University of Colorado, has been researching climate change for the past 25 years and illustrated the difficulties with the transformation. He says that in order to replace our electricity needs with cleaner energy by 2050, we would have to build one nuclear power plant or 1,500 wind power turbines per day for the next 30 years, while subsequently shutting down an equivalent amount of fossil fuel generations. And that is only accounting for the energy needs of today. The population is constantly growing, and so is energy demands. And there is about 2 billion plus people who would also like to use the same modern services that we enjoy today. These services, like transportation fuel and heat and electricity, depend on fossil fuels like coal, oil, and gas. Also, a little fun fact, when gas is burned for power generation, it releases 50% less CO2 than coal. So to put it simply, it doesn't seem like the demand for petroleum products are going anywhere for a while. So whether you're a hater or a lover of oil and gas, I believe knowing more about something that is entangled into our everyday life is worth talking about. So I'll be discussing conventional and unconventional extraction and all the exciting things that come with it. So brace yourself. Now, before getting into the extraction bit, more needs to be known about the naturally occurring formations of hydrocarbons. And hydrocarbons are chemical compounds that make up oil and gas. These hydrocarbons are found in reservoirs. Now, usually when people think of oil and gas reservoirs, they think of a big pool or a lake of petroleum underneath the ground just waiting to ooze out of the surface. Well, Hollywood has helped to paint this very deceiving image. Like, if you have ever watched the Beverly Hillbillies, it's an older sitcom, but in the intro, you'll see Jed shooting at the ground with his gun, and then all of a sudden, bubbling crude oil emerges. It looks easy, very easy, but instead, oil reservoirs are much harder to access. They tend to be in layers of sedimentary rock that are saturated in oil and gas. These reservoirs are in between a source rock, which is at the bottom layer that kind of acts like the kitchen, where all the oil has been cooking for millions of years. And then there is a top layer, which is an impermeable cap rock, where oil cannot get through. Now, I just gave you a very simplified description of the geological formations, but just think of oil reservoirs as sandwiched in between a source rock, which acts like a kitchen, and a cap rock, which prevents the oil and gas from escaping to the surface. So how much an oil and gas reservoir has depends on the porosity of the rock or loose sediment that makes up the reservoir. Porosity is the amount of tiny spaces that the rock has within it. These pores in the rock hold the gas and oil. So imagine that some rocks like sandstone or limestone, which have high porosity, act like a sponge, a very hard sponge. And if you were to take a porous rock and put water on it, then you will see for yourself that the rock absorbs the water, while a low porous rock would just bead the water on the surface and not slurp it up. So more porosity in a rock means that it can absorb more oil and gas from the below source rock. So the more porous a rock is, well, the better. But porosity is not the only thing that determines whether a reservoir is good or not. No, no, no. The degree of permeability of the rock is also very important. Permeability is a characteristic that allows the oil and gas to flow through the rock. It's great to have a rock that is full of hydrocarbons, but if you cannot get them out of the rock, well, it doesn't really matter. The permeability of a rock is determined by the composition of the rock. One great example of a rock with low permeability is shell. And if you ever heard of shell oil, well, this is the rock that the name is referring to. It is a rock with high porosity. It can hold more hydrocarbons than sandstone. What? But it has extremely low permeability because of its tiny grain size and its high content of clay. When you pour water on this rock, you can see that the water beads on top of its surface rather than absorb the fluid like the sandstone does. To get the petroleum out of the rock like shell, a lot of pressure is needed to squeeze the fluid through the rock, and this is where different extraction methods come into play. So there is conventional and unconventional extraction, and their application is determined by geological formations. Earlier I mentioned the layered sandwich of geological formations that produce hydrocarbons. Conventional drilling extracts the oil and gas from the reservoir rock, which is above the source rock, and the source rock is the area where hydrocarbons are made. After the rock and gas has been made, some of it seeps into the porous and high permeable rock reservoir above. Unconventional drilling extracts oil and gas not only from the reservoir rock, but also the source rock. So, let's first focus on the reservoir rock. The reservoir layer is usually made up of limestone or sandstone, which are considered conventional rocks since they have high porosity, so they can, again, store fluids inside the pores, and they have also high permeability, so the fluid flows easier through them. And to extract the oil from this type of reservoir, traditional drilling is used, which is called conventional. Conventional drilling extracts the hydrocarbons by natural pressure from the wells and pumping operations. When the well decreases in production, this type of well can use an artificial lift or water and gas injections to increase production. Once other means are needed to extract petroleum from the ground, then it is considered to be unconventional. Unconventional drilling methods are used to extract hydrocarbons when traditional methods are not able to be used. Shell oil and oil sands are two forms of hydrocarbons that need unconventional methods to be extracted. Now, advancements in technology has allowed for this, and it has resulted in the transformation of international relations and domestic economies. So, horizontal drilling, as well as hydraulic fracturing, also known as fracking, are two technological innovations that have allowed more oil and gas to be extracted. These discoveries have allowed producers to artificially induce more permeability into petroleum-bearing rocks that are mainly composed of shell. Horizontal drilling is used both in conventional and unconventional drilling. It's when drilling is first done vertically, then the drill bit is turned 90 degrees, when it reaches a shell rock and is then drilled horizontally for about 1.5 kilometers. Holy schmoly. This is to create more surface area for extraction. Fracking is when fractures are created along the horizontally drilled path in the shell, and then fracking fluid is injected into the well at a pressure so high it causes those fractures to break through the shell. The trapped oil and gas can then escape and be brought up to the surface. And environmental issues arise concerning water contamination, a possible increase in seismic activity, and pollutants created during fracking production. Fracking has been used for over 80 years, but recent technological advancements in this method has made shale oil economically feasible to extract. Shale oil production has skyrocketed in the United States over the last decade. The U.S. still buys foreign oil at discount prices from countries like good old Canada, but it is increasing its capability to supply its own energy needs. And a lot of that is thanks to the increase of shale oil extraction. In 2016, the U.S. was about 89% self-sufficient in its total energy consumption. In 2019, the U.S. became a net exporter of all oil products. And some of the reasons it has taken this path is to become less affected by global energy supply disruptions and limit its reliance on politically unstable states for its energy needs. Relying heavily on foreign oil, well, can cause some issues. And if you know about the 1970s oil crisis, you may understand why. In 1973, the Organization of Arab Petroleum Exporting Countries placed an oil embargo on Western countries like the U.S. because of their involvement in the Arab-Israel War. These countries stopped selling oil to the U.S. from 1973 to 74, which made gas prices quadruple. As a result, ridiculously long lines formed at gasoline stations. Leaders called for citizens to conserve energy by doing things like encouraging people to refrain from putting up holiday lights on their house, and even the American automobile industry took a hit. Their bigger gas-guzzling cars would be outpaced by Japanese manufacturers producing more fuel-efficient models. America is in a shale oil boom, and they are experiencing the economic joys of reduced oil prices and increased jobs. But with every boom, there comes a bust, and Alberta is experiencing one right now. The Alberta oil sands produce about 2.8 million barrels of crude oil a day. The oil sands is a mixture of bitumen, which is a form of crude oil, sand particles, and water. It has a high viscosity and cannot be extracted by conventional methods. There are two ways to extract the oil, bitumen, from the earth. One way is by open pit mining, and the other is by using a drill technique called in situ. Only 3% of the oil sands is surface mined, and it takes 2 tons of oil sand to make 1 barrel of oil. To make the oil sands economically feasible, they use huge equipment to shovel the oil sand into hauling trucks, and these shovel heads are as big as a 2-car garage, and these hauling trucks can carry about 400 tons of sand per load. They take the loads to a crusher, which breaks it down. Then they separate the bitumen from the sand by using hot water and heat. Then they send it for further processing. In situ is a horizontal drilling technique that injects steam into the ground to convert the thick bitumen into a liquid in order to extract it from the ground. Now, bitumen is heavier than most crude oils and it requires an additional process called upgrading. So it can then be refined into products like transportation fuel and other petroleum-based products. Now, it also poses environmental challenges such as high CO2 emissions during production, tailing pond contaminations, and large amounts of fresh water is used. Also, production costs are much higher than conventionally produced oil. But economically, it is responsible for creating jobs and contributes to tax revenues that support social programs and infrastructure projects in the province and throughout Canada. So, there you have it, folks. The amazing world of unconventional and conventional oil extraction. Also, one thing that I'd like to mention is that around every profession, there's a culture. Every job provides a person with a ritual, with experience, and with knowledge that is distinct to that occupation. So whether you're a police officer, a taxi driver, a painter, or an oil worker, I believe part of one's identity is linked to their job. So I chose a song, Oil Man, by the Chad Cook Band, to hopefully represent the life of a rigger. Now, I don't work on the oil field, so I don't know if it's a good song to represent what life is like, but I like to imagine that it is. Also, if you are interested in sharing your knowledge about the resource sectors of the Eastern Townships, please email me at workingsofthetownships@gmail.com. Again, workingsofthetownships@gmail.com. So, I hope you have a good one. Till next time, adios.
There ain't a darker night than the ones I've seen. When you're too damn tired to even dream. But you come alive when the doghouse screams. Oh, the oil field's dark as the money is green. There ain't a headache like the ones that come. Between a 2-week hitch and a 7-day run. Blood, sweat, spit, and a filthy tongue. Ooh, the oil field hurts like a snake bite stung. So I'll send a card for Christmas and birthdays missed. And I'll sign the papers for the woman that I couldn't. Take the blame if I don't make the good Lord's list. But when I die, I hope they know it was all for them. 'Cause I'd do it all over again. There ain't nothing in the world like earning these stripes. They're getting put out of work when the price ain't right. Yeah, I left my soul, my pain and my strife. Ooh, the oil filled holes are filled with my life. So I'll send a card for Christmas and birthdays missed. And I'll sign the papers for the woman that I couldn't. Take the blame if I don't make the good Lord's list. But when I die, I hope they know it was all for them. 'Cause I'd do it all over again. Toes on my feet. Built the roughneck man that I'll always be. Yeah, and I did it all for my family. Oh, rig up, rig down, this patch just might bury me.